We've seen recently, particularly in the wake of the Cardinal Sean Brady controversy, the government maintained that the laws of the church should not supersede the laws of the land. This probably would not have been the case 20 years ago. Some would welcome the advent of an increase in secularism in law, others would lament it. Bishop Michael Nazir Ali is a diocesan bishop in the Church of England. He's been a visiting lecturer in a number of universities and colleges in the UK, Canada, the USA and Australia. Last week he presented a talk to the Iona Institute entitled Triple Jeopardy, Aggressive Secularism, Radical Islamism and Multiculturalism. It's also the name of his forthcoming book and he joins me now. I'm also joined by David Robert Grimes, Doctor of Medical Physics and himself a humanist. But first of all, Bishop Michael Nazir Ali, what exactly are your concerns?
Well, in Britain, anyway, I mean, I don't know the situation in Ireland so well, but in Britain, we've had, for instance, the abolition of Christmas by secularists who say that this offends people of other faiths. I find no evidence of that myself. We've had people wanting to wear crosses at the workplace sacked for wanting to do so, nurses, airline workers, and so on. We've had campaigns in the courts against prayer in local councils, by implication in parliament. And the question is, how far does this go? I mean, the coronation service is a Christian act of worship, after all. We've had pressure, for instance, on things like the Catholic adoption agencies that have had to close down because they were not given any recognition of conscience issues, which even the Abortion Act of 1967 did. And we have continual pressure on church schools, both Anglican and Roman Catholic. So that's the kind of background and experience from which I have come.
Now, when you say the abolition of Christmas, and I know Christmas for many has become a shopping festival rather than a religious festival, but still, the elements of what Christmas is all about are still evident in British culture. So who has abolished Christmas,
well,
and in what way?
Local councils influenced by aggressive secularists who want to call it Winterval now in some places.
Winterval?
Yes.
David Robert Grimes, you're a humanist. What do you think of that kind of change? Because a lot of people, it may not be as religious, deeply felt as it used to be, but still it's baby and bathwater territory. They may want the law to be the law of the land, but they don't want Christmas to go away.
Well, firstly, before I get into my spiel, that's called the Winterval myth. That is not at all true. There is no local councils that are banning Christmas.
I'm and sorry, that is not that, the case.
We
in
can,
Birmingham,
we can dispute this if you like, but this has all been thoroughly debunked. Nowhere is banning it. They're banning certain symbolizations in council halls, town halls, which is understandable. If you want somewhere where the seat of politics is, where prayers before council meetings, like you said, why should there be prayers before council
because
meetings?
Because there have been for 400 years. Faiths. For 400 years, there have been prayers in councils. Why should a former councillor, who's not even a current councillor, take them to court and have the prayers banned? In fact, I'm very glad that the government in Britain is going to reverse that. I mean, would you ban them in Parliament? You know, I was a member of the
Absolutely.
House of Lords for many years. Well, no, but that's not what most people in Parliament want.
Well, can I explain what secularism is? Because it's so oft misrepresented that it really bothers me. It's the principle of separation between governments and people mandated to act for the government and religious institutions. It maintains a state neutrality on all religions. You can't have a state neutrality and yet have a prayer for one particular denomination or one particular religious belief, because what you're doing then is you're saying this is accepted and this is not so much. Now, secularism is not about intolerance or oppressing religion. It allows everyone to practice what they believe, but not to have their belief mandated for over other people's beliefs.
But there is no such thing as a neutral vantage point. You come loaded with your presuppositions, and to say that secularism is somehow neutral, whereas other points of view are not, is also a myth.
But you're making secularism out to be a belief. It is not. It is
a
principle.
I'm afraid it's a belief.
But it is not
a
belief.
It's a system of beliefs.
Otherwise, you'd be arguing
worldview.
It's state-mandated atheism, which it is not. And that is often put forward and really bothers me.
I'm not saying it's atheism. I mean, it may not necessarily be that. And very often it is. But it is a system of belief. It is a worldview. It is how you do things. And I think it would be very helpful if secularists agreed that theirs was also a worldview alongside others.
Well, I find that very interesting because you were flagged by The Guardian for having a problem with militant Islam and Islamic calls to prayer. So it seems to me that you're only unhappy that your particular beliefs are not being mandated.
I'm sorry, you're misstating the position.
I can use your problem quote. It's right here if you like.
Yes, well, I'll tell you what I did say. 5 times a day on a loudspeaker. That was my objection. I have no objection to the Islamic call to prayer, but I do object to the whole neighborhood. I once lived within only feet away from a loudspeaker making the call to prayer 5 times a day. You tried doing that, David. And
I did. I lived in Saudi Arabia for 11 years.
So you know what I'm talking about. Now, what I'm saying is, of course, people should be free to make the call to prayer, but not on a loudspeaker where the Muslim profession of faith is heard by everyone, whether they want to or not.
In Ireland, twice a day for many churches, the Angelus bell is tolled.
Yes.
On RT radio and television now, they have sort of taken a new view of the Angelus, which is it's a call to prayer for anyone who wants to have a prayer, but still it represents the tradition of the sequence of the Angelus bell. Is that qualitatively different to the call to prayer by the Muslims?
It's absolutely qualitatively different because the call to prayer is a Muslim declaration of faith, which is made 5 times a day over a loudspeaker. That is quite different from a bell, which doesn't say anything. I mean, you've just implied that actually it could be taken to mean a variety of things.
Well, the Angelus bell does mean something, in fact.
It's not a statement of faith over a loudspeaker 5 times a day.
No, it's over a national broadcaster twice a day.
But you're not defending the Angelus bell.
No, but I think we're being sidetracked from the issue. The issue here, what we want to talk about, is secularism society. If you want a fair and democratic government system, you have to be able to represent all your people equally and not show favoritism to one and certainly not show discrimination. I'm not arguing that.
The only way to do that is the Judeo-Christian tradition, which has actually produced our view of the dignity of the human person, of equality of people. It is not, secularism has never produced a moral system. I mean, this is not to deny.
Excuse me, I'm going to have to flag you on that. You have been flagged for coming out and asking homosexuals to repent.
And what has that got to do with a
moral system?
Listen, bishops,
I can quote you if you would like on what you said.
Every time a priest or a bishop takes a service, he asks everyone to repent.
He doesn't go to people who aren't at the service and ask them
everyone,
to repent. Like
everyone is asked to repent and to start.
No, but it does
anew.
Bring us down to some of the hard issues, which is what should inform the laws of the land, or should the laws of the land be designed in the interests of society as a whole without being informed by any particular denomination.
But that is not actually possible.
Well, it certainly is possible.
If they are informed by secularism, that is also informed by something. This is one thing I totally disagree with David about. Morality is higher than the law. Otherwise, we would never be able to make a case against unjust laws.
And what gives you the right to define morality?
I mean, in this country, you know, well, that's one thing at a time. In this country, you know how unjust laws have prevented liberty in your own land. Now, if you just said the law is the law is the law, you would never have any resources to challenge the law. I mean, the law has been challenged. The Judeo-Christian tradition itself provides for the prophetic element where injustice in a country, injustice even in a religion, can be challenged.
But there are many people of no religion who will challenge injustice. It's not the prerogative.
Yes, but on what
only
basis do they challenge it? I mean, that, you know, take the dignity of the human person. What is your basis for believing in the dignity of the human person?
The basis for it is the essential of what we have in societies, what we have about ethics and morals.
Where does that come from?
I'm going to explain, if you allow me. Boils down to the golden rule, which is to treat others as you would yourself. Now, that predates Christianity by several thousand years. In fact, it was the Code of Hammurabi in 1780.
Which is a religious code.
There's also the ancient Greek philosophers, Pittacus, Thales. They all came out with this as well.
Yes, all with religious
beliefs. No, they weren't.
I've never met a religious...
Epicurus was not religious.
Yeah, definitely religious.
And are you saying that non-Judeo-Christian religions are unethical and immoral?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
You said Judeo-Christian beliefs are the basis for morality.
Yes.
Now, I dispute that because, for instance, then you take any religion or any you know, people without religion and automatically put them in a camp where they are without morality.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I mean, in fact, what I am saying, now let me do finish what I'm saying, because in fact, moral systems have generally arisen out of religious beliefs, whether that is the laws of Manu in Hinduism, the Torah of Israel, the Sharia of Islam, the canon law of the church. I haven't found any moral system that has arisen from atheistic secular humanism.
But the bishop is people saying the right where his, if you like, ethical and moral framework comes from. The point I was actually coming to with David Robert Grimes was the question of what informs your moral and ethical framework. It's probably growing, part of it is growing up in this society, which in turn had a Judeo-Christian framework. Well, and you've looked at it, you've analysed it, I'm sure, and modified it to give you your worldview.
To an extent, it's growing up in a society. But just to flag you there, I grew up in Saudi Arabia, in Riyadh, a theocracy for 11 years, a hardline Wahhabi Muslim. I don't think that influenced me. I'm not going around trying to implement Sharia law on people. But I think what influenced me more was Saudi, and there were, I lived in the compounds in Riyadh, in multicultural, multi-societal, people from different, from Asian backgrounds, from the South America, from all over the world with different beliefs. Yet the basic human dignity, basic human respect was what kept those things functioning. Not a shared belief, not a shared morality system from some text or from some authority. It was that people respected each other because that's how you survive in any society. I mean, the argument that you're putting forward that you need religion to be good, I find false. I know many atheists who are fantastic people.
I don't deny that. I said that at the very beginning. But moral systems have arisen from religious worldviews. You tell me of any moral system.
Okay, let's pretend that's true. So now we've
outgrown
the need for
it. No, don't pretend. I'm not here for pretense. You tell me if there's any moral system that has arisen from your worldview.
Okay, can I respond to that? If let's go on face value. Let's say you're correct. I don't agree you're correct, but let's say you are correct. You could argue the same in science. If a system comes over and supersedes another one and it's based on discoveries of one, you take the good parts out of it and move on with it. You don't go, we have to hold on to every part of it. It's like anything. You go, well, that was part of that was good, so we'll take the good part out and we'll keep going on.
And what good part do you see in the Judeo-Christian tradition?
Well, there's some very good things.
Excellent.
There's some great things in Islam as well.
I'm not denying that. It's not about hating anything.
It's about letting everyone have the right to express,
secularists are not the arbiters for allowing other people to have their say.
So why are you the arbiter?
I'm not saying that I am.
Mm-hmm. Bishop, finally, the whole question of separating church and state in law. I mean, we've had our arguments in this jurisdiction over the last while. The latest one being a discussion about the sanctity of the seal of the confessional and whether or not the law can say to someone, if you know of abuse, irrespective of where you've heard it, you've got to go to the police. Mm-hmm. Now, how would your morality, your ethical code cope with that, where the law of the land to safeguard children, which is a good thing, instructs you to do something that religion says perhaps you should not do?
Well, of course, the thing about the confessional is, certainly as far as the situation in Britain is concerned, that the confessor must not absolve a person who's confessing a particular sin until they go and tell the police. It is only on that basis that the seal of the confessional is still legally respected in Britain.
And this is the law now, not how churchmen would observe it.
No, this is the law.
Some people would maintain that the very act of going to the confessional to meet the priest, that is part of the whole process. Yes, and anything you learn, irrespective of a decision not to absolve that sin, that still has to be confidential.
Yes, I mean, this is a matter that I'm very happy for it to be debated. We must not jeopardize the whole business of people unburdening themselves because that itself is very good for society in terms of the healing that is necessary. However, on the wider question of the separation of church and state, I have nothing against it. I mean, if people want to separate church and state, okay. But what I do say is don't then throw the baby out with the bathwater in terms of how the Judeo-Christian tradition helps, certainly in Britain and possibly in Ireland, helps us to make decisions of policy and legislation day by day.
All right. Final words from you, David Robert Grimes.
I would say I would almost be in total agreement with you there. I said, of course, don't throw the good ideas out with the bad. But what you want to do is you want to have a system where no matter what belief you have or lack thereof, that you can be respected, free to practice, free to worship in private, but not expect the state to mandate for your belief over anyone else's. That's the one difference in policy.
On that difference, may I thank you both for coming into studio. Bishop Michael Nazir Ali, former Bishop of Rochester and now practicing as an academic in Oxford University, and David Robert Grimes, Doctor of Medical Physics and Humanists and soon to be in Oxford University. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you, Pat.